Hello, I'm Anton Beckerman, and I'd like to welcome you to the AgEcon MT podcast, part of the AgEconMT.com information website, and a production of the Department of Agricultural Economics and Economics at Montana State University. The podcast is a series where we discuss topics and issues in agricultural and natural resources economics and chat with people who can provide unique perspectives into those issues. Today, as part of our Spotlight series, we're talking with Dr. Joe Jansen, one of the regular contributors to the Ag Econ MT blog and podcast series. Joe is an assistant professor in the department and joined the team in 2013 after completing his PhD at the University of California, Davis. Welcome, Joe.
Thanks, Anton.
Joe, let's start with you describing some of your professional background, a little bit about your research interests, and how you think about just approaching research.
Sure. So I have a bit of an ag background. I was raised on a farm just outside of Winnipeg, Manitoba, up in Canada. And my dad and my brother still farm there. So I'm kind of fortunate to have the ability to sort of lean on that farm background as I study agricultural issues. And there's a surprising amount of overlap between issues that affect farmers up in Canada and farmers here in Montana. And so,
and why is that?
Well, we're growing a lot of the same crops. Agronomically, we're facing a lot of the same challenges. And we're both competing in markets for commodities that are really global markets. So I have that background. And then I study commodity price and trading dynamics. So I really sort of want to think about, well, for these commodities that we care about, commodities that we produce here in Montana, who trades those commodities? Who produces them, buys them, sells them, and uses them? And why do they trade, and then how does that affect the prices that we see, and particularly the price dynamics, so how prices change across time.
Cool. And what are you working on right now? What are some of your more recent projects, and what have you found? What are some of the questions that you're asking?
So a sort of a big picture question is thinking about like the amount of competition that the U.S. faces in these world markets, and particularly thinking about the wheat industry. People have noted that there sort of seems to be a lot of competitive headwinds for the U.S. wheat industry as they sort of seek to compete in a global wheat market.
Is that new, or is that has been around for a while?
Well, I think you could say 50 years ago, you talked to economists who studied the world wheat market. Alex McCalla, for example, one of my mentors at the University of California, Davis, studied the world wheat market. And he said basically at that time, it was Canada and the U.S. were the sort of export duopoly. And that picture has completely changed, particularly in the last 10 years, where Russia, Ukraine, and the European Union have grabbed a fairly sizable, if not the majority, of the share of trade in world wheat.
And just for those who don't know, what's a duopoly?
So a duopoly would be sort of there's a market with two sellers, right? So we had sort of, you could think of Canada and the U.S. as having sort of the lion's share of that market. They were the two big sellers. And now we see a market with lots of sellers, but in particular, where we weren't competing with these countries in Eastern Europe before, especially Russia and Ukraine, they've really sort of grown their share of world trade in a way where they now sort of have, they are certainly bigger than the U.S. in terms of their share of world exports. So that's sort of the world that we live in. And I want to think about, has there been a concurrent change in sort of where price discovery and trading is occurring? So normally we'd think of sort of U.S. wheat futures markets as being where people meet to decide on what the world price is. And that's maybe no longer as relevant in a world where the majority of traded wheat is being exchanged between countries that where the U.S. has nothing to do with it. So I look at price discovery at U.S. exchanges and then at the Euronext exchange in Paris.
What are some U.S. exchanges?
So we think of sort of the Chicago Board of Trade, right, as being the leading U.S. agricultural futures market. And we have a number of other markets in the U.S., the Kansas City and Minneapolis markets. And each of those markets is sort of discovering the price for a particular type of wheat. But those prices are all related because wheat is sort of a substitute. Wheat traded on each of those exchanges is sort of substitutable with the others to some to some degree or another.
And for the wheat classes that are grown in Montana and kind of the northern Great Plains, which are the two markets that are most important?
So the Kansas City and the Minneapolis markets are the most important. Kansas City, where they trade hard red winter wheat, and then in Minneapolis, where they trade a hard red spring wheat with a higher protein content. So those products are differentiated to some degree, but end users can substitute between hard red winter and hard red spring, or they can substitute between wheat from different parts of the world. So they could use hard red winter from the U.S. Midwest, or they could use the hard wheats that are produced in Russia and Ukraine. And end users will choose the products that the, you know, sort of that give them the best combination of price and quality. So I compare price discovery on these different exchanges, and I find that whereas in sort of the 2006 to 2008 period, we had about 80 to 90% of price discovery for world wheat occurring on U.S. exchanges, that number's coming down, and we're now sort of in about a situation where 60 to 70% of price discovery is occurring here in the U.S. So those not only have European and sort of the former Soviet Union, not only have those countries become sort of more important in terms of production, but they've also become more important in terms of trading and sort of where price discovery occurs.
So why is that important? Why would a Montana farmer care about this?
Well, it's not necessarily a good news story, but if we think about if those markets, if those European markets start leading sort of the world price discovery for wheat, it potentially increases basis risk for U.S. farmers. So the price in Montana is going to be sort of compared relative to the leading world price benchmarks, right? That's how our prices get set. We take a leading benchmark, and then we subtract the basis or the difference between that benchmark price and the local price here in Montana. And so if that benchmark changes, there's the potential for the variability in the basis to get bigger. And ultimately that risk is borne in the local market by farmers here in Montana. So it's something that we want to sort of keep an eye on to think about for Montana farmers, you know, who are sort of making decisions about what crops to grow, what risks do they have to bear, price risks do they have to bear as they make those production and marketing decisions.
So how far along are you in that project?
So that project, we just started getting some results right now. We're doing some sort of additional robustness checks to sort of see, is this result sort of something that we can sort of hang our hats on? We'll be presenting at least these preliminary results at our annual Agricultural and Applied Economics Association conference. It's coming up in Boston in a few weeks.
So results to follow, and we'll follow up with Joe on that particular project. Looking forward a little bit, what are some of the other bigger issues that you've noticed or that you've heard about and that might be available for research, especially within the context of importance to this region?
Yeah, so most of my work sort of focuses on the grains and sort of crop production side of agriculture. But I think this project that I just mentioned and others sort of highlight the need to think about competition and how we operate in very almost hyper-competitive markets where there's sort of very low barriers to entry. Any country in the world can sort of start producing. I mean, as long as they have a reasonable set of agronomic conditions, start producing the kinds of things that we produce here in Montana. So we're not the only place in the world that produces wheat. We're not the only place in the world that raises cattle. So when I think about what sort of responses do we have to very competitive world markets. And so one of those is sort of product differentiation, and that's what Montana has sort of historically relied on, that we produce a higher quality product.
What do you mean by higher quality?
So a product that offers sort of a set of characteristics, say for wheat, a set of milling characteristics that can't be matched by the types of wheat that are produced in other parts of the world. So we grow higher protein wheat that has a sort of a specific milling profile that people are willing to pay more for than other types of wheat.
And we've seen some of that, I guess, with some of the recent entry in the last 10 to 15 years of multinational firms trying to come in here and as elevators and processors and try to take advantage of those particular characteristics directly from farmers.
That's right. I mean, I think the big sort of ongoing question is how much are people willing to pay for those attributes? Right, so product differentiation is only sort of a useful strategy if you're producing something that's useful and valued by the end user, right? So it can't just be that your product's different, but it has to be sort of useful and valued. And so can we sort of continue or even push that product differentiation strategy further? I think that's one sort of avenue for research. And then thinking about what sort of management strategies do we have to respond to world competition? So if we're thinking about grain marketing, one thing might be sort of the use of storage and how do we use both the on-farm storage that we have. We know growers in Montana have a considerable amount of on-farm storage. So how do we make smart decisions about storage both on the farm and off the farm?
In order to take advantage of either price increases and then selling at those higher prices, or to ensure that, you know, if prices go down, there's an opportunity to store at perhaps a lower cost than selling.
That's right. I how do we get the best price for the, given that we're going to produce these crops on a sort of an ongoing basis year after year, how do we get the best possible price?
A question, and
ultimately sort of raise the welfare of our state.
Yeah, a question that's always on the mind of farmers and ranchers. Well, great. So this AgEconMT.com endeavor that we're pursuing here, it's pretty new for this area. It's pretty exciting, I think, in a way to get information out and a different way to get information out. What are you looking forward to in being a regular contributor and being consistently involved with this project? What are you looking forward to in offering or getting back from this community approach to information?
Well, my hope is that it's sort of a virtuous circle where it offers us a unique and a sort of more a way to reach more people with the sort of analysis that we're doing here in the department. But then also we have an avenue to sort of receive feedback. So oftentimes, you know, we go out into the state and we get sort of a small amount of feedback from a particular audience in a specific place. But here, I think with the AgEconMT website and the analysis that we're providing there, there's an opportunity for communication to flow the other way as well. And so sort of put what we do out into the world and then to hear back about sort of about the validity of that work, but also sort of how can we provide additional analysis that's new and relevant and useful to people here in the state.
Yeah, I think we're always looking for that. Well, thanks, Joe, so much for visiting with us, and very much look forward to many more of your insights and future podcasts and blog posts. Of course, you as a listener can access these and all other episodes at ageconmt.com. We also encourage you to be the first to know about new episodes and MSU Economics outreach and extension events by clicking the subscribe on iTunes button for podcasts and signing up for our events reminder email list. And that's on our ageconmt.com website. And of course, we would love to hear from you about what you think of this episode and other informational items on the ageconmt.com website, and encourage you to submit your ideas, questions, and suggestions for future posts and podcasts. I'm Anton Beckerman, and we want to thank you for listening and hope the weather is always in your favor.